Every episode of this podcast is about true things that have happened at some point or another on this planet. Each episode is different than the next, and they are each centered around stories that are odd, outlandish, or of the occult. This podcast will include foul language. This podcast may also include themes of graphic content such as murder, rape, or gore. Listener's discretion is advised.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Seven Circles. We are your hosts.
Dan, and are you expecting me to introduce you here as well?
Yeah, I figured you'd give it a go with the introductions.
Oh, you keep mixing this up and I'm getting very confused. Yeah, me, Dan, and Autumn.
So listen up. This is episode 13. We started out with the story of Paul Bateson, the X-ray tech who was in a film called The Exorcist and went on to become a monster in real life. For episode 7, we covered the story of Otis Toole, a monster that was created in a world of poverty, abuse, incest, and neglect. For episode 9, we talked about a lot of killers and the trophies they take from their victims. In that episode, we touched on a monster called David Parker Wray, whose trophies are on display at FBI.gov. After that, we took a little murder break, but today we are back in full force with the incredibly dark story that is David Parker Wray's life. Buckle up, grab a drink. This is your only warning. This episode will get very dark very fast, so you might not even want to listen, but go ahead.
We dare you.
I don't believe you though. How bad can it be? You said Otis Toole was a monster. I thought he was pretty tame.
I mean, Otis Toole was literally famous for decapitating a small child, so I think he was a monster too. But yeah, in comparison to this next guy, pretty fucking tame.
Word. So, unfortunately, there was once a man called David Parker Wray. He was born on the 6th of November in 1939. Nothing really special happened on this day. It was a typical Monday. 2 days later, though, someone tried to assassinate Hitler with a bomb. The bomb was timed and it would have worked, but Hitler began his speech 30 minutes early. Something he usually never did. But this story is not about that villain. In this story, our villain is American, and he killed far less people than Hitler did. But he did kill, and he did torture, and he did not do it alone. And despite a far lower number of victims, relatively speaking, I'm going to go ahead and say this guy was just about as evil. Sorry. I mean, Hitler's Hitler. But this guy, man, holy fuck.
When David was a boy, he and his sister Peggy lived with their grandfather. Their father was an abusive alcoholic who was hardly ever around. Their mother got tired of trying to raise her two children mostly alone, only seeing her husband randomly when he felt like coming home to kick the shit out of her and the kids. So she dropped them off at their grandfather's house and left. Peggy and David never saw her again. Dad would stop by to see them on occasion, and instead of bringing them food or money or clothes, he would bring his fists and pornographic magazines. That's right. Instead of reading his children bedtime stories, he showed them porn.
There are some pretty good stories in Penthouse, man.
I think you're thinking of Playboy for the stories.
Either way, there's some pretty damn fine journalism in both.
So, Grandpa was okay most of the time, but he was super strict, and if the two would get out of line, he would beat them. Peggy was better at adapting to this life than David was. She quickly learned the rules and understood how to avoid most of Grandpa's wrath. David was not like Peggy. He was often in trouble at school because he was shy around girls and soft-spoken.
It's always the quiet ones.
He would get beaten up by bullies at school constantly. This got him in trouble with the faculty, and they would report it to Grandpappy. Instead of being sensitive to the harassment that David faced at school, he just beat on him more.
Which is better than beating off on him, but don't worry, there'll be plenty of that later.
Ew.
As a teen, David began to develop sexual fantasies about raping, murdering, and torturing women. Allegedly, his first assault happened during this time. David claims to have kidnapped a random woman and tied her to a tree, leaving her there tied to the tree when he was done. There was never any evidence proving that this event happened, nor did the woman or any witnesses come forward. After high school, David joined the army. he was honorably discharged shortly after. Again, there will be plenty more discharge later. Also, yes, another sick bag of shit who was in the military. If you've listened to any of our previous episodes, you may be seeing a pattern here.
Yeah, and the numbers were like something like 35% of people who join the military end up being serial killers, but it just keeps, I don't know.
Whoa, I think you got that a little twisted there, Autumn. It's not 35% of people who join the military become serial killers, it's 35% of serial killers happened to have been in the military, surely.
Oh yeah, that was the numbers.
Yeah, I mean... I mean, this is America, man. How many millions of serial killers do you need? Holy fuck. Anywho, David then had a string of girlfriends and wives. His third wife, who he was married to at the age of 27, gave birth to a daughter called Glenda Jean Ray, who ended up with the nickname Jessie. Why Jessie? Who knows? If any of you out there in listenerland does know, please tell us on social media. Jessie pops up in the story later. Pops up. I mean, that's an understatement, Autumn. Jessie pops up in the story later, but we'll hold off talking about her right now. I have no doubt it's going to be unpleasant, though.
3 years after the birth of his daughter, David fucked off to join the hippie revolution. The year was 1969.
Giggity.
1969 was a pretty eventful year. The Apollo 10 mission released the very first color pictures of Earth as seen from space. President Nixon announced the withdrawal of 25,000 troops from Vietnam.
How nice of him. What a stand-up fella. Dick.
Neil Armstrong became the first man to walk on the moon, and the infamous Manson murders took place that year as well. Oh, and 400,000 people all showed up to a farm in New York for some music festival called Woodstock. So, David was in the thick of the hippie revolution. He spent a lot of time hitchhiking to different music festivals and events. He met a girl called Sally, and for a while they traveled with another couple around the US. One day, Sally announced to the couple and David that she was pregnant. A few days later, Sally and all of her belongings vanished. The friends asked David, like,
"Hey, where did Sally go, man?"
And David told them that she was a free spirit and it was her choice to leave. And they believed him. It was 1969, so why not?
Emphasis on the word spirit, I'm sure. So, soon after this, David tried the family life again and got back with his ex-wife. That marriage failed and he got married twice more after that. At this point, David moved away from all of his failures and moved to Elephant Butte, New Mexico. No, I will not pronounce it Butte, because it's way funnier this way. So suck my fat ginger balls. Now, we are in the 1980s. David is in his 40s. He moved to 513 Bass Road, and that's where he stayed for the remainder of his life. So, Elephant Butte is a teeny tiny little town. Ironically, it's an elephant butte. It's not that teeny tiny, is it? Anywho, the population in 2010 was just 1,500 people. The population tends to grow and shrink over the years, and we couldn't find anything about what it was like in the 1980s. It's situated on the largest lake in New Mexico, so it's just a tourist town. That's it. Just a little shithole town in New Mexico that only exists because of the lake. But more about shitholes later. Giggity.
No!
So David is in this town that's literally in the middle of nowhere, and somehow just dives straight into a hardcore BDSM lifestyle. Disclaimer here. At Seven Circles, we want to say first and foremost that the BDSM community is not to blame in any way, shape or form when it comes to people like David. The BDSM community is all about consent and communication and is typically a lot of fun. Those are two of the most important teachings in that world. People like David take their own personal BDSM fantasies into a different realm that has nothing to do with the BDSM community.
So now it's 1984. A lot of space travel is going on. There are some major political movements happening in Brazil. Richard Ramirez, aka the Night Stalker, claims his first victim this year. John Kittinger becomes the first person to travel solo in a hot air balloon across the Atlantic. And David Parker Ray is out on his boat drinking with his friends on Elephant Butte Lake.
It's Butte, Autumn.
It's spelt Butte, though.
Butty.
Butta.
Maybe that's what he used to lube them up.
Ew. So his friends are chatting about baseball and having a good time. David pipes in and in a darkened voice goes,
"Hey, yeah, I know every inch of this lake. It's a good lake to stash baldies in. You just make some cuts in the corpse to let the gases expel, shove some rocks inside the cuts and inside the body's holes, and drop them in. There is so much algae in this here lake that you can't even see the bottom."
His friends just got real quiet and uncomfortably sit in silence, trying not to make eye contact with David. And then David goes,
"I was just fucking kidding, y'all."
And he laughs it off. David would say dark shit like this all of the time, but this was the 1980s and people just brushed things off like this.
I'm not sure the time period was the issue here, Autumn.
I mean, mental illness was not talked about back then, and especially amongst men. And anyway, David was known to be a kind person, other than these weird jokes of his. He was always that guy who would find a wounded animal on the side of the road and try to nurse it back to health. If he couldn't save them, then he would pay for the vet to check them out.
Yeah, but was anybody ever there to see him find them? He was probably the one who fucking wounded them in the first place, Autumn.
Yeah, that was my thoughts exactly. So, serial killers usually begin their career by practicing on small animals, by torturing them and killing them. So it makes sense that David was actually hurting these animals, but he didn't want to actually kill them at the time, so he would pretend like he cared about them.
Yeah, I guess, and by doing so and bringing them back and pretending to care for them, he was portraying some kind of weird picture that he wasn't a fucking nutcase.
Yeah, he was like being the hero in the situation.
So, back to David's daughter. Jessie rarely saw her father while she was growing up. On the rare occasions that she did visit with him, he exposed her to his masochistic lifestyle. He began to groom her to be more like him every time he would visit. So little by little, Jessie started to be desensitized to hardcore pornography and BDSM. Nothing wrong with that at all, other than the source it came from.
Yeah, so David's daddy showed him porn, and in return, David showed his daughter porn. But, like, way more hardcore porn. Like, what the fuck?
It's the circle of life.
Everything comes back around. Blech.
Comes back around.
Okay. So, this started at a young age, and by the time Jessie was in her teens, she began to develop a taste for that lifestyle. When Jessie was 19, she went to visit her father in Elephant Butte, and he exposed her to her first bondage torture session. David had picked up a sex worker and paid her in advance for the session. While the woman consented at the beginning of the session, by the end she fled out the door screaming in terror.
Any idea why?
I'm sure somewhere during the session she was like, "Okay, this is getting too hardcore for me, I want out," and they probably just didn't let her leave and she, I don't know, freaked out.
I mean, that's the point at which you give a hooker more money though, right?
Sex worker, Dan.
What if I want to call them hookers?
Then you gotta pay for that kind of privilege.
Well, I just said, that's where you show them more money. Anywho, after this occurred, Jessie turned her father into the FBI. Because she's a fucking dirty little snitch. No, I kid. She gave a sworn statement to them, detailing allegations of abuse, torture, human trafficking, and even murder. They brought David in for questioning. At the start, he did not confess to any killings or the trafficking, but he did admit that he was into bondage and torture porn. The FBI did not have any victims or dead bodies at this time, so they had to release David. This release led to another 13 years of David's darkness. After Jessie reported her father and the FBI didn't do anything about it, she actually went back to her father's lifestyle and fully embraced it, kidnapping, torture and all. Oh yeah, don't think for a moment this is just your typical story about a sick man. There were women and even their friends involved in this. Not to mention their dogs, but I've been politely asked not to discuss that particular part of the story. I don't know, if the tail's a wagging, it's having a good time, right?
The dog is literally the only one having a good time. I guess besides all the freaks watching this. Oh god, I don't want to talk about it. Fuck you. So, David bought a 22-foot long cargo trailer, like the kind of trailer you would see on the back of a semi-truck. This was what would be known infamously as the Toy Box, and also Satan's Den. He parked the trailer on his land and installed an air conditioning unit. And it was, I forgot to add, it was on his land next to his regular house.
That's relatively considerate, don't you think? Air conditioning the thing.
I mean, the air conditioning was for him, not for his victims.
I mean, the victim spent more time there than he did. I guess he was maybe getting a little more sweaty, I don't know, but...
He treated his victims like they were livestock, so no, I don't think he gave a shit about their feelings.
I mean, some people air condition their stables. And where they keep their moo cows, don't they?
I don't know, I'm not a farmer.
I don't know, you gotta keep that milk cool.
Okay. Over the years to come, David would invest almost $100,000 into customizing his toy box. The trailer was reinforced around the frame, and David made it soundproof and escape-proof.
Virtually soundproof, Autumn. Virtually. He made this very clear. But $100,000! Man, this is like the lap of luxury.
And most of the money was spent on things we'll talk about later.
Dildos!
The interior walls and ceilings were adorned with a maze of pulleys, ties, chains, handcuffs, and weights.
And dildos.
There were pliers, clamps, whips, scalpels, padlocks, and other such equipment.
And butt plugs.
There were drawings and diagrams of the human form in all different torture positions. There was a homemade coffin lined with carpet with breathing holes drilled into the sides.
Air holes? And air conditioning? It all seems pretty cush.
Do you want to be one of David Parker Ray's victims? It sounds like you're into this.
I mean, not really. I don't like the idea of the carpet burn from the inside of the coffin. Right. Although from what I've seen of the pictures, it was more kind of fur-lined than it was carpet.
No, it was like the old school 70s gross nasty carpet.
Oh, like full-on 70s shag pile.
Yeah.
Ironically speaking, of course.
The centerpiece of the room was a gynecological chair. It was modified to restrain victims and position them how he saw fit. There were also video cameras in the room. Yeah, he filmed a lot of his sessions. David would have monitors facing the victims so that they would be forced to watch themselves during these recordings. The tapes are floating around out there somewhere. David sold them on the black market. He would keep his victims inside the toy box for anywhere between 3 days and 3 months.
Yeah, the cameras were actually closed circuit and hooked up to the TV in the living room in his house so he could watch and monitor his guests. So, David would abduct women from the side of the road, or in a bar, or he would just hire a sex worker. Hookers. He would bring the victim into his house first and chain them to the bed. This is where he always started. After a few hours or even a few days, he would blindfold them and bring them out to the toy box. After being strapped to the chair, he would remove the blindfold. The victim would have a look at the surroundings inside of the toy box and be filled with terror. You can see photos and videos of this place on the internet with a quick Google search of David Parker Ray. It's not the kind of place anyone would want to be unless they consented to it, for sure. And, I mean, I guess looking at it, many people would consent to it. It looked like a good time, if it was consensual.
I mean, most of it did. He had... You want to talk about... You want me to add something? He had this giant-ass dildo thing that he carved himself. And at the end of it, where the balls usually are on a like a fake dildo thing, were spikes.
Yeah, so you get down and then you get kind of spiked in the thighs or buttocks. That's a pretty commonplace thing that some people are into.
No, like gnarly spikes, not happy fun time spikes.
Yeah, like spike wheels and stuff. I mean, they can draw a little blood. It's some people like that, man. But yeah, in any case.
The dildo was massive, also.
What did he carve it out of?
I don't remember. Something terrible.
Did it have splinters?
I think so.
Oh, vagina splinters.
No.
Anus splinters?
Okay. So at this point, David would play an audio tape for his victim. You can hear the full audio on the internet, but we will read some of it here for you so you don't have to listen to the whole thing if you don't want to. And I probably wouldn't if I were you. This tape acts as an advisory message for his victim. And here is the first little bit of it.
Hello there, bitch. Are you comfortable right now? I doubt it. Wrists and ankles chained. Probably you're blindfolded. You're disoriented and scared too, I would imagine. Perfectly normal under the circumstances. For a little while, at least, you need to get your shit together and listen to this tape. it is very relevant to your situation. I'm going to tell you, in detail, why you have been kidnapped, what's going to happen to you, and how long you'll be here. I don't know the details of your capture because this tape is being created July 23rd, 1993, as a general advisory tape for all future female captives.
Okay, so imagine that, but being read by a crusty old gross man voice, because that's what it sounds like. If you go listen to the original, there's not very much of it out there. There's probably 7 minutes of his original voice. It's gross. He's crusty. He's a nasty, crusty old man. That's all I gotta say. Ugh.
Would you like me to read it again in a crusty old man voice?
No.
But what about the dildos, Orton?
So then this crusty, disgusting old man goes on to explain to the victim in detail how he is about to torture them. David got off on this whole part of the kidnapping, but he captured so many victims that he got tired of saying these lines over and over again. But he still liked the effect it had on the victim, so he recorded this tape. The tape is about an hour long, and it's the perfect tool that David used to sap any hope their victims had of escape or salvation. Imagine the worst things that could happen to you whilst being tortured. David Parker Wray did those things. He did not hold back. I listened to the whole tape twice.
Oh yeah, I can see why you listened to it twice. You wouldn't want to miss the finer details of the dildos, whips, electroshock machine, surgical equipment, some of which would be used to remove nipples and breasts if the victims didn't do exactly as they were told. Never speak unless spoken to. Address us as master and mistress. Be docile. Do not bite. Yada, 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 yada.
Yeah, I didn't want to listen to it twice, but I had to for the research. My brain, ow.
The things we endure for you, listeners.
If he did all of the things that he spoke of in that tape, it's just some of the most terrible things that I have ever heard.
I mean, consensually speaking, most of the things he described are in the average range of depravity, honestly. Take that from a man who errs in the upper range. But of course, anything non-consensual really can't be classified as anything but heinous, and I have to say, even I was pretty fucking disturbed by hearing his words. It's all pretty horrifying. Like, a Serbian film doesn't have shit on this dude.
No, they are kind of in the same category, my friend.
They're not, though, because the Serbian film was fucking fiction, and as heinous and disgusting as it was,
it wasn't real.
It did not have the same effect on me as listening to this dude's fucking tape, Orton.
Yeah.
So in said tape, he tells the victims that he couldn't possibly murder every single girl that they kidnapped. He says that if he did, then there would be bodies strung all over the US. And this is what he told them. He said that when they are done with the victim, that they will drug them up with a cocktail of sodium pentothal and phenobarbital. So he tells them after they are drugged that they will be hypnotized and then brainwashed into thinking that the events never even happened. Which he must have done a pretty good job of, given how many victims there were, but so few of whom have come forward. At the end of the tape, he tells them that they will next be required to answer a series of medical questions, and that they should disclose any medical conditions they might have. The medical condition does not mean that they will be set free. David only wants to know about it so that he can make adjustments, in his words. He signs off by saying, "Have a nice day," which was as funny as it was chilling, you know, not being strapped to his torture chair myself as I heard it.
Nobody knows how many women and girls David and Jesse kidnapped and tortured. After David was arrested, the FBI found hundreds of videotapes and photographs of his victims. The thing is, though, David took great care to disguise his victims when they were being recorded and photographed so that they were unidentifiable and could not be called in to testify against them in case they were caught.
Skills.
Well, I say that, but one victim slipped through the cracks. One of his victims had a tattoo and David failed to cover it up. The FBI released an image of the tattoo to the press. Not long after this, Kelly Van Cleve came forward. She had spent some time in Elephant Butte in the summer of 1996, but there were 3 days of her life in the town that she could not recall. Since her captivity and release, Kelly has suffered from depression, anxiety, and nightmares. She had no idea what happened to her, only that it was something bad.
So as David expressed in his introductory tape, or advisory tape as he put it,
It was really for the best that he drugged them and made them forget everything before releasing them. Like, why is my ass so sore?
But she still suffered from depression, anxiety, and nightmares, and she had no idea why, and that's why.
Yeah. And if the FBI had not released a picture of her tattoo, and she had not come forward, then she probably wouldn't have been told about everything that happened to her, and she probably would never have remembered.
So, I said, since her captivity and release, so since the time she was released, she suffered from all that shit.
Okay, fine. But I bet she still didn't know why her butt was so sore.
So next, we're going to talk about some suspected murder victims of Jesse and David Parker Ray. Jesse had a friend named Dennis Roy Yancey, known simply as Roy, and they were really close. The two of them allegedly murdered their drug dealer. I say allegedly because his death was ruled to be suicide by Metallics. Jesse, David, and Roy were all into the occult. The drug dealer's body was found on the floor with a pentagram drawn around it and black candles all over his apartment. His stomach was full of nuts and bolts, and he had a chrome doorknob shoved in his arse.
Arse.
But yeah, the dude totally killed himself.
Sorry, what? Suicide by Metallics? What a fucking ridiculous ruling. And I don't even mean the suicide part, which is pretty fucking sus.
I know, like, the law enforcement in Elephant Butte in 1980s was so fucking shite.
Like, yeah, I don't know. I fell on this doorknob and then accidentally died of all the fucking nuts and bolts I'd ingested.
Let me eat this nuts and bolts bowl of cereal.
I bet that wasn't the only nut they found in his stomach. So Roy's ex-girlfriend was hanging around and asked if Roy could score her some drugs. So he said yeah and took her to David's, where she was forced into the toy box. Her name was Marie, and people missed her, so there was a statewide search. After 3 days, Jesse handed Roy a length of rope and told him to kill her. With the police looking for her so hard, there was no way they could let her go. Roy confessed that this was all videotaped, but the tape was never found. It's probably floating around out there on the dark web, though. Right after they killed and buried Marie's body in a canyon, Jesse fucked off with Roy to Galveston, Texas, and there they stayed for a year.
If you haven't been to Galveston, Texas, I suggest you go. Dear listeners, it's a beautiful place. Have you been?
No.
Okay. It's beautiful. Gorgeous. Anyways. So when Jesse and Roy came back to Elephant Butte...
But?
They met a chick at the bar called Cindy Hendy. I fucking love this name. Cindy Hendy. They got into a relationship with Cindy, and then Cindy ended up in an exclusive relationship with David Parker Ray. This went on for a while, and then once Cindy gained his trust, he showed her the toy box. And the list. David had typed up a kind of how to torture list. It's a long list, and I couldn't find it on the internet. The links all go to Error 404. So Cindy was brought into the fold.
The genital fold.
Ew. And became David's new accomplice. So, Cindy and David drove their RV to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and picked up a sex worker called Cynthia Jaramillo. When she got into the RV, David told her that him and Cindy were actually law enforcement. Cynthia tried to escape immediately, but they overpowered her. Hours later, she found herself chained up, and then this is when David played the recording. She was raped and tortured for days. She was not yet inside of the toy box, though. Remember, they would sometimes start out inside the house, chained to the bed before being moved to the toy box.
So David was at work and Cindy was in the kitchen making sandwiches. Fucking AC? Air holes and sandwiches? Man. Anyway, it doesn't sound that bad, does it? So Cindy had left the keys to Cynthia's restraints just out of reach, because you just can't trust a woman to fucking do anything, right? I kid.
She was making sandwiches.
She was doing one bit right then, I guess. But anyway, we kid. I'm sorry. You're horrible. Just look, shut up and go make me a fucking sandwich while I read this part.
Okay.
And don't spit in it. So Cynthia managed to grab the keys and quietly but quickly unlock herself. Instead of running out the door, Cynthia grabbed the phone and dialed 911. Cindy noticed what was happening and smashed a lamp over Cynthia's head and tried to get her back in her restraints. There was, somewhat conveniently, an ice pick nearby, and Cynthia grabbed it and stabbed Cindy in the skull. This did not kill her, but it was enough for Cynthia to finally make a break for it. Cynthia ran out of the house, completely naked with chains dangling from her body, and ran down the street, where a neighbour saw her and took her inside. The neighbours called the police, who showed up and rescued her. The 911 dispatchers reported the 911 hang-up call that happened at David's house. So in this tiny little town, the police thought that these two incidents must be connected. The police rushed to David's house and banged on the door. There was no answer, but they let themselves in anyway, with probable cause of trouble being the reason for entering without a warrant. I bet that gets used a lot.
Fuck the police.
Whoa, man. There might be some police listening.
I mean, I'm sure you're a good cop.
Yeah. Yeah. The cop who's listening right now, you must be a good cop. Not one of the shitty cops.
Because you're listening to a podcast about murder and stuff, so you're a great cop.
Yeah. Definitely not one of the ones from fucking Elephant Butt who did nothing to help anyone.
Those cops sucked. Sorry. Anyways. So this was the end of the Toy Box fun time for David, Cindy, Jesse, and Roy.
And Fido.
Mm-mm. Nope.
Whose knot would take approximately 3 minutes to retract from the vagina and approximately 5 from the anus. After the publicity surrounding the arrests, not that Fido was arrested, another victim, Angelica Montano, came forward. She told a similar story and said that she had reported the incident to police, but there had been no follow-up. Standard.
Yeah, shout out to the fucking Elephant Butte police. Hopefully here in 2022 they're a little bit more thorough.
I don't know, man. I looked at Elephant Butt on Google Maps. It doesn't look like the kind of place that would have any kind of decent police force, even in this day and age.
But there was one more victim that they would claim. 36-year-old Patricia Rust of the FBI was asked to make detailed sketches of every item that was found inside of the toy box. She spent 5 days on this assignment. When it was done, she turned in her work and went home. That night, she committed suicide.
That's pretty fucking powerful. But equally, I don't know that we can really attribute this single case to a sudden mental decline sufficient to commit suicide, can we? Like, you joined the FBI, fool. You ain't no Clarice Starling, are you?
No, and I just, when I heard about that, it really shocked me because she did spend 5 days detailing every single item in that thing, and it messed with her head that much.
Yeah, it seems unlikely. I feel like other things were afoot for her mentally and other things that she had seen as an FBI agent. I mean, what I said there was maybe a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but yeah, I don't know that this single case would have been the cause of that suicide. But yeah, with all that said, it's still rough, and yeah, sorry, Patricia Rust, that happened to you.
So, Jesse never admitted to any of the crimes. Roy claimed that he was innocent and blamed everything on David. Cindy Hendy. Also proclaimed her innocence. But once she was threatened with 93 years of prison, she became angry at David and blamed him for sucking her into his world. She met with investigators and gave a full confession. David claimed that he was innocent and that every woman that entered his home was a willing participant. However, once he realized how much trouble Jesse was in, he decided to make a deal. In exchange for Jesse's release, he would confess to all the charges against him. The only charges being of kidnapping and torture of 2 women.
Wait, what? You said there were extensive photos and tapes of the shenanigans. Whether their faces were obscured or not, how was he only convicted of 2?
It's weird how the law works. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a police person. That's just how the law works. If no people come forward, then the only people that came forward are the only people that he can be convicted of.
Lame.
Yeah.
Alrighty, so Jesse got 2.5 years in prison, and in September of 2001, walked out of prison a free monster. She had an additional 5 years probation. No rape for 5 years. It's a hard life, isn't it?
Roy accepted a plea deal and was released on parole in 2011. Another monster out there walking around. He, ironically, lives in a place called Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, and is active on social media.
In the year 2000, Cindy Hendy...
In the year 2000...
Cindy Hendy was sentenced to 36 years in prison, but was released in July of 2019. This monster never expressed any remorse for her crimes, only self-pity and blame.
David Parker Ray was never convicted for a single murder. No bodies were ever found. There was not enough evidence to prove that he murdered anyone. But we all know better than that. Authorities believe that David might have committed as few as 30 murders over the course of his life, but quite possibly more.
Quite probably, I dare say. Ray denied torturing anyone. He said, "It was a source of entertainment to me to create these tapes. That's why there was a disclaimer at the beginning of the tape stating that it was for adult entertainment only. My fantasies are not that unusual. There's approximately 2 million people in the United States that have, basically, the same fantasies. Not sure where he got that figure from, but I'd say at least that many, frankly. At the time, I suppose it was somewhat less normal, in quotes, than it is now. But rape is rape is rape. However you look at it, unless it's just rape play. And it fucking wasn't, David, you fucking bag of shit." This total bag of dicks, David Parker Ray, was given a sentence of 223 years in prison for his crimes. As soon as he entered his prison cell, he died of a heart attack, something you might suggest would have been a blessing to his victims.
Well, we really didn't go into a huge amount of detail about what actually happened to those poor girls. It's pretty fucking harrowing, and if you really want to know more, you should just get on Google and listen to the tapes and look at the footage of the toy box for yourself. If you do, you'll see why we held back a little.
Yeah, but at least, since the vagina is designed to allow for childbirth, David never used dildos larger than the size of a baby's head, and also didn't use anything too big in the anus, because he wanted to keep it fun for fucking. So that's cool. Not that a good old gaper can't still be a good time, right?
Vile.
At least he said in his tapes there's a big difference between causing pain, which he enjoyed, versus causing permanent damage or injury, other than the needles that would be stuck through their tits, nipples and clitoris, so his victims could go on to lead normal, happy lives. You know, not needing to shit into a bag.
I mean, the victims that survived. And then he cut off people's nipples too, so I don't understand.
Only if they were bad.
But, like, were the people that he, like, de-nippled? Like, were they released into the wild with the no memory of what happened? Just, like, one less nipple in their lives?
I mean, maybe. Like, why does my butt hurt and why am I missing a nipple?
Yeah, that's some shit, man.
It is some shit.
Sleep well.
Not into a bag, maybe.
Yeah, well, that's the end of this episode.
You're welcome.
We're going to go ahead and take another murder break. We were going to do something murdery for the next episode, but this one was too dark for even Dan, so...
I mean, the murder really was the least of this episode that bothered me.
Oh, no.
I would not consider this a murder episode at all. The murder really was somewhat inconsequential in this episode, Autumn. Everything else that happened, which, again, we really didn't go into that much detail about... Everything else was the problem here, not the murder. Thank you for listening, because you probably fucking regret it after all this shit. If you like what you hear, which, again, in this case is highly unlikely, please come and support us on Patreon at 7 Circles Pod. Your donations and support can help us elevate the quality of our podcast, and maybe even make us choose topics that are somewhat less fucking disgusting.
This episode of 7 Circles was written by me, Autumn Vale, and also Dan Griffiths. 7 Circles is produced by me, Autumn Vale, with sound editing by Dan Griffiths.
Original music by Null Machine and art by Caroline Gates. You can find us on social media, Facebook at 7 Circles Podcast, Insta at 7_circles_pod, and Twitter at 7 Circles Pod. Nelly the elephant packed her butt, and said goodbye to the circus. Off she went with a trumpety trump, 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 trump.
That's a very British song.
You never heard that?
No, it's very British.
Aw. Should we see if we can find a song about dogs?
No, thank you.
There's got to be a song about dogs.
I don't want to do that.
Why not? Why do you not want to talk about the dogs?
I don't want to talk about the dog. It was a German Shepherd. I don't want to talk about
it. Was it a German Shepherd?
It was a German Shepherd.
How do you know it was a German Shepherd?
Because he said it in the tape.
Oh. He spoke about its 10-inch but very skinny penis.
Mm-mm.
And how sometimes you would help it enter the anus rather than the vagina.
Okay, we are done now. Goodbye. I hate this episode.
Yeah, it was fucking rough. You chose this shit, man.
I didn't know it was going to be so... I knew it was going to be... Okay.
I mean, that tape, dude. Like, I mean, if you're still listening, and you're probably not, but if you are, I highly recommend that you do not go and listen to the tape.
Don't listen to the tape and don't watch a Serbian film. The end. Goodbye.
Wow, you brought that shit up again?
It's a good time to bring that up.
But yeah, the tape, it's...
That's it. That's enough.
I'm not easily shocked, or I'm not easily disturbed. And some of the things that he talks about, you know, consensually speaking...
They'll be fine.
I might be kind of into.
They'll be fine. But not...
Man. And just the way that he talks about it so casually, and just imagining being a victim sitting there listening to it, it's just... It's just fucking horrible. And yeah, I wouldn't. Exactly.
Okay, goodbye.
That's the sound.
Goodbye. That's the sound of goodbye.
His victim's anus would make when he pulled out.
But once she was threatened with 90...
Threatened?
Just let me read. But once she was threatened...
It's reached that time, listeners. Once she was threatened.
Fuck off. But once she was threatened. But once she was threatened with 93.
Come on, just say it normally.
I can't. But once she was threatened with 93.
Fuck. Come on, fuck off, dude.